Well, good morning. It's good to be together again and share with you this morning. I had to think that how would you like to be God when half the congregation puts their hands down and half of them raises their hands and rejoicing? What should he do? He could throw up his hands too. I think some of you know that I spend some time in a truck and I spend some time on a conference line, that there's maybe 700 people there, Pennsylvania Dutch conference line, and a lot of percentage of them are farmers, and so they were hoping for snow. They were hoping for snow before cold weather comes. Apparently, too much of this 0 degrees over bare hay fields burns out or freezes out the hay, which I thought I was a farmer too, and I guess in Lancaster we never really worried about too many zero-degree days, but so now there's this swath of snow that came up through, and you know, how does that 700 people rejoice throughout that different? So maybe we should pray for God or something. But nevertheless, that's not the subject here this morning. I do have a message here from, taken from Jeremiah chapter 3, if you want to turn to that. We have a lot of discussion about divorce and remarriage and adultery and all those, what those old meanings are in our day to day. And this is also kind of going down that path of divorce, or actually adultery, as an illustration that God uses to bring out a point here. And so we want to look at that. When I think of the evils of natural splitting up man and woman, and somebody is with another man's wife, and that adultery, that word adultery, we kind of, hopefully that still is a abrasive, or kind of causes a reaction in our spirit when we think about that, or when we hear about that, or we see it happening. I do admit that I don't think it's the same when I hear the subject as it was in the 60s and 70s when I grew up. And I usually say the mile stretch along 322 where I was raised, from 1 mile the east and west of us on 322, I knew everybody by name, and nobody was divorced and remarried. And so nobody, we remember the first people that moved in. And that was like something happened in our little community. And something, you know, something wasn't right in the spirit of a Christian. That was somebody different. And, you know, just think about it here today. I mean, I don't know how bold or blunt you want to get, but we don't really go around sharing partners. And if we would, what does that feel like to you? What is that? That should really be a letdown of a feeling. There's something out of place when we talk about being with another man's wife. And yet when we think about it as society goes on, and I'm confessing that it's not as abrasive as it was at one time, that it really should be in the natural sense. It should make a difference. So, I mean, not to go into detail, that's not part of the sermon here this morning, but not to go into detail on how to handle, you know, what our reaction really needs to be. But the fact is, as we look at this subject of adultery, that is how God brings out a very vivid picture of his people, and they're turning from him and mixing their allegiance from one husband to another. And then for us, as our lesson for today would be that we need to see it the same way as God sees it. That's very important to him, that our allegiance is to him and to him only. In Colossians, maybe chapter 3, it uses the term preeminence, which we don't really say that word too often. But I do believe that a little bit of a word that we don't use every day or think about every day is good to sometimes look at, because it's really meaning that we would keep Christ as first place in our spiritual life. That he is our allegiance is to him, and we're devoted to him and him only, and then not anything with the world. And so that's kind of where we're at here this morning. There's a number of things to draw out of here, but the topic would be spiritual adultery. And this topic and this word of adultery is the biggest fault or sins that Israel and Judah have committed throughout their history, of turning to other gods when he is the God that provided things for them, and he reminds them over and over again. And the same way it would be for us. So are we going to take a lesson from this and make sure that God, Jesus Christ, has the preeminence so that we don't end up being guilty of this, as abrasive as it sounds, for us to be switching partners? That's how God looks at us in half, given half and half. Half allegiance to him and half to the world, or 1% to the world, if you will. It's not proper for me to spend one night with another man's wife. And 1% would not be proper if you would take it as God looks at it. But, you know, we do also have very interesting nuggets of partial sentences in here that I think we also need to catch. When God is saying this to Judah and Israel, and I'm not going to separate all the different the differences of those two nations, but the two people groups there, but he has partial sentences. If you would just turn to me, if you will return. And it's not a long description of what he means by that, or what, but some of it is a little bit more, and we'll read a little bit of that. And so it's not just the message this morning, isn't just that we need to stay away from adultery, but we need to realize the God that we serve is for sure provides all the needs that we have. Plus, when we live in our day of grace here, he's very much interested in us returning. If something is wrong, if we have committed adultery, if you will, then there's a God that is in this Old Testament setting that's very redemptive, that's very loving, and comes through very clear. And so let's read the first 15 verses of chapter 3 of Jeremiah. It says, They say, if a man put away his wife, and she go from him, and become another man's, shall he return unto her again? Shall not the land be greatly polluted, but that thou hast played the harlot with many lovers? And here's one of those partial sentences. Yet return again to me, saith the Lord. In other words, excuse me, we have this pleading, and that comes through in the whole chapter, if I would read the whole chapter. Verse 2, lift up thine eyes unto the high places, and see where thou hast been land with, in the ways that thou hast sat for them as the Arabians in the wilderness. And thou hast polluted the land with thy whoredoms and with thy wickedness. Therefore the showers have been withholden, and there hath been no latter rain, and thou hast a whore's forehead, thou refusest to be ashamed. Wilt thou not from this time cry unto me, my father, thou art thy guide, the guide of my youth? Will he reserve his anger forever? Will he keep it to the end? Behold, thou hast spoken and done evil things as thou couldest. The Lord said unto me in the days of Josiah the king, hast thou seen that which backsliding Israel hath done? She is gone up upon every high mountain and upon every green tree, and now and there hath played the harlot. And I said, after she had done all these things, turn thou unto me, but she returned not. And her treacherous sister Judah saw it. And I saw when For all the causes whereby with backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and given her a bill of divorce. Yet her treacherous sister Judah feared not, but went and played the harlot also. And it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom that she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and with stocks. And yet for all this, her treacherous sister Judah hath not returned unto me with her whole heart, but feignly, saith the Lord. And the Lord said unto me, the backsliding Israel justified herself more than treacherous Judah. Go and proclaim these words toward the north, and say, Return, thou backsliding Israel, saith the Lord, and I will not cause mine anger to fall upon you. For I am merciful, saith the Lord, and I will not keep my anger forever. Only acknowledge thy iniquity, that thou hast transgressed against the Lord thy God, and hast scattered thy ways to the strangers under every green tree, and you have not obeyed my voice, saith the Lord. Turn, O backsliding children, saith the Lord, for I am married unto you, and I will take you one of a city and two of a family, and I will bring you to Zion. And I will give you pastors according to my heart, which shall feed you with knowledge and understanding. And the chapter goes on. We could, same subject the rest of the way there. And so we'll stop reading there and go back to the beginning of the chapter. And this spiritual adultery that they're involved in, you can see is a very big thing to God. And as we think of ourselves here in our day and age, we can make a lot of applications here. Sin in our lives makes us useless for God's work. That's pretty easy to understand. Sin in the church robs the church of its power. And on those kinds of things go. And so we need to look at this kind of a situation here and I think learn from them. So the first point that I'd like to bring out to us here this morning is the conditions that we see here that lead to spiritual adultery. Just a few things that I think is brought out here and also can be applied to us in our day. The first one in verse 8, it says, And I saw when for all the causes whereby backsliding Israel committed adultery, I had put her away and I given her a bill of divorcement, and yet her treacherous sister, Judah, feared not, but went and played the harlot also. So the first point, whether you're thinking about the real technical interpretation of this scripture or the spiritual application for us today, I think the first thing that I'd like to bring out is there was no fear of God. In verse 8 I read there, and Judah feared not. And so down through the ages, in my few years of living, I think the thing that I look back in childhood when whenever you talked about church or the activities of church or the preachers or anything to do with the Bible or the church, there was this really high regard. And sometimes it was in my setting, it was a lot of fear involved. And a lot of things were done because of that, of a fear of what might happen or what the Bible would say. And so we, you know, when a minister would come to our house for Sunday lunch, well, first of all, in our setting, the minister, the ones ordained were the only ones that I ever heard pray out loud. And so when they came to our Sunday lunch, then my dad would ask them to pray, where I never heard him pray at lunch. And so the preacher came and all the children sat in order. And everybody sat straight up, and we ate all our food, and there was no embarrassment of anything in front of the preacher. That was a fear. That was a high regard of church and those ordained and so forth. So we come down, and so my first point here is that there's no fear of God. I would say that that was a bit exaggerated. We came and we reacted to that, and I think since the 70s and 80s that we kind of have this a lot more of a casual view of church and the church leader responsibility and so forth. And I'm not trying to put you on a guilt trip or anything like that here, but there's got to be a little bit of a balance in between, I'd say. That to me, when I look at my childhood, that was, man, the preacher drove by in his car and you about stopped in your tracks, you know. And today it's the other way. And it's rightly so, we're all on one level. The preachers do have some responsibilities, and there's some of that goes on. When I look at the idea of this setting here, that they did not fear, what it's really saying here is that these two people groups of Israel and Judah were in different bondage at different times or captivity, and then they should have watched each other, and that's what God is saying. They didn't even make any kind of adjustments, even though they could have watched what's happening, and the punishment or judgment of God is upon the other group. But they didn't react. And this sister Judah, this treacherous sister Judah, did not fear, even though she saw Israel and the results of turning away from God. There was a need here, I think, that people would have a high view of God or a fear of God. But they didn't. They feared not. So my first thing would be that we have a reverent fear of God, or respect is the word, I guess we like to use. It's a little kinder. But at the same time, then I look at Paul's life, and I look at 1 Corinthians chapter 9. We don't need to turn to it. 20, maybe 26 and 27 of chapter 9. It talks about him not beating the air. You know that phrase? He's bringing his body under submission or subjection to God. And so even in the New Testament, there's something about still respecting the Bible and respecting God. It's not like I'm saying this old-fashioned way that I think was exaggerated is way out of date. There is something about still respecting God. And so that fear, that godly fear, I think should still be there, because Paul's saying that he's doing that so that he's not a castaway himself. He's disciplining his way of life so that in the end he doesn't, the newer versions say, he doesn't disqualify himself. And so there is something about fear, the fear of God. I think we need to keep that in mind as an application here that we can draw from this. Also in verse 9, then it says, "In it came to pass through the lightness of her whoredom," or the casualness, or the "I don't care" attitude of her whoredom, "she defiled the land and committed adultery with stones and stocks." And so not just emphasizing the fear of God this morning, but another condition is the lost sense of sin. This lightness is something that, you know, we need to keep this in balance, that there is a seriousness, and see that we need to see sin the way God sees it and agree with him. And sin in the eyes of God was terrible in those days, and I believe it still is today. We look at Sodom and Gomorrah. We look at those different events that happened in the Old Testament, that he hated that so much that he just destroyed the whole thing. And so we look at Romans chapter 3, verse 23, and we talk about the wages of sin is death. So we know that it still applies today, that God's sense of sin is still the same. And so when we think about what are the conditions that lead to spiritual idolatry, I think first of all is there's the lack of fear of God. Stop and think about that for our day tomorrow and this coming week. Not that I'm trying to put something on you that is extreme, or that you need to be scared and that God's going to come around every bush. It's not that. But I think it's important that we understand the fear of God in a healthy way, and disciplining ourselves in the New Testament times that we can follow him in a godly way. Sometimes I've already said, I struggle sometimes at whether we're talking about Mennonite preachers or preachers on the radio and the bigger name churches. Where do we find today a preacher like Billy Sunday? Just for example, I'm pretty sure I used his name before. He was kind of crazy. He was almost like a maniac. and but he preached the word of God, and he was a he was preaching a lot of times against alcohol. And where do we even hear that today? Where's that? Where's adultery heard? Where's that? Where's the sin of adultery heard? That somebody would jump up and down on a pulpit and stand on his head about drunkenness. You know, this kind of thing. Where is that today? And so when I think about the things that are happening, you know, the gambling and all kinds of things, there was preachers that aren't just Mennonites that were actually really jumping up and down and preaching against those things a number of years ago. And I just don't hear it. And so therefore, when I think of the whole idea of conditions that lead to spiritual idolatry or adultery is the fear of God. You know, I really think some of that, I don't know, I'm not blaming them. I'm kind of blaming myself, I guess. I think some of those things are wrong, were wrong when they jumped up and down, and I think it's still wrong today. I just am not the jumping up and down kind of preacher. But I guess I do have the same concerns. The objects of spiritual adultery is the second point we see here in verse 9. Judah here was committing adultery with stones and stocks, simply idol worship, and we don't do that today. We don't have idols necessarily, that we have stones and wood stuff that we bow down and kneel before, and those things. But what is that? What is anything?